Donda Brastocks.
Hi, good morning.
Yes, hi.
Right. One question that I would like to have raised next time the medical team is answering questions to the public is this issue of whether or not our supply of oxygen is stable, because based on the international news, there seems to be a kind of an arms race for available supplies. So I'm just wondering whether or not ours is secured. Well, using that term on advisement, because something as vital as the air we breathe, there will always be a high price for it, and I'm taking into consideration what obtained when we tried to get the PPE, and the long arm of the Americans reached over and plucked our really small supply. So if you compare those two items, something you put on as opposed to something you need in your lungs, I think the actions will be a little more callous. So I'm just trying to find out. We're hearing about the ventilators, but it's like a car with petrol. You need one with the other. So I'd really like to find out from government whether our local supply of oxygen is as stable as possible, because I'm fully aware that situations regarding that will change with regard to whether our supplier has other markets for it, or whether there's a, you know, there's a call for other clients for that same item.
In your own experience, how have you been coping with this situation, the COVID situation generally, though?
Coping is a matter of common sense. You want to preserve your life and those of the people around you. So you basically, there are a lot of things that are being asked of you that really boil down to common sense. You need to protect yourself in all the areas that you can, so you do it. I mean, a lot of issues that are being raised, I think, you know, they're being, like, unnecessarily contentious. What could help the situation is if we get the information that we consider relevant to us. But
such
that,
as,
again, is subjective.
Such as? What you raised earlier?
Well, yeah, that, as well as, I think I broached this particular point already. I can, how should I put this, truthfully, I can comprehend government pushback in terms of naming these sites, that are, or rather refusing to name these sites where there have been COVID outbreaks. And even as I say this, it seems ridiculous, but we have some local entities volunteering the fact that they've been affected, and yet we're having this A bar on the South Coast and a bar on the West Coast. It seems to be running two different operational pursuits in tandem. One makes a mockery of the other. So, you know, those kind of things. So I find it a little weird to me, because it would give us the option of knowing whether we want to patronize certain institutions or whatever. And if that's the problem, I still think the choice is the patron. I would hate to be in a situation whereby somebody has the upper hand in deciding whether or not I can go to their place and it's sort of hidden from me and I just walk in unaware. That's all to their benefit, not to mine. So it's those things that I really, and then the mere fact that there are other companies coming and saying, you know, putting their hand up, the head above the parapet and saying, okay, this thing happened, we are doing so and so. So that's what I mean, is it makes no sense in the general scheme of things. So it's those kinds of schisms that have you a little bit thrown. But basically it is what it is, huh?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Thank you. Here's another side to the concern that I'd raised about trying to get people to share a bit more of the long-term effects. This person says, look, I've had a positive case in my household, and I have close family members who work at the prison, and I can't begin to tell you how some idiots are treating us. People would love to tell their stories, but the stigma that some people have attached to COVID and even being tested, it's sad, but it's happening. So that's another dimension to it. And it's something that you can't ignore. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Good morning. It's 11:37.
Yes, good morning. I want to ask a question.
Yes.
Why is it that the NIS can't seem to get over money to people that already haven't claimed since last year?
Can you turn off your radio, please? It's distracting you.
No, I'm on the outside.
Well, I can hear it coming through, though. Anyhow, tell me, what was the problem again?
I want to know why it is that the NIS can't seem to get people money out that haven't claimed since last year.
Well, they obviously have. You remember that they had a lot of problems since last year. The large number of claims that they've had to deal with. And, you know, prior to that, there would have been instances where people were complaining all back then about, you know, what they saw as the inefficiency in trying to get that kind of those claims processed. But it really was exacerbated by COVID.
Another question. With the hazard pay, why is that only certain people getting? For me, orderlies, gas station workers, everybody is frontline workers. And I don't think that that is fair.
Well, I listened to the Prime Minister talking about the nurses, saying that they needed to submit their information, and once that information is submitted, then the Minister of Finance would have to consider whether it is possible to give everybody hazard pay or not. You know, we got limited resources, and it's not something that is sustainable right across the board. So they will have to be selective about who can get it and who can't. I'm sure, though, that almost everybody who is stretched out by COVID will tell you that they believe they're entitled to it. But it comes right back to the resources and whether we can afford to do it. What do you do for a living? Are you entitled to hazard pay?
Yes.
And you accept what the government is saying about it?
No, because I believe that we all are frontline workers. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be doctors, nurses, in order to get hazard pay. Because we still have to do the cleaning.
Okay. And you're exposed to a hazard?
Yes. And another question. Why they're saying we don't have community spread COVID and so much people is coming down with the COVID. In my area right now, they have COVID. People come to go to somewhere for people to do for the COVID. I won't disclose it on the radio.
Yes, fair enough. But as far as you're concerned, this community spread, because it's not just local spread. That's how you see it.
Yes.
I understand. I don't know that I've heard them denying community spread in recent days, though. That I haven't been speaking to that. So perhaps by now, given the magnitude of the problem, it's quite possible that they may officially recognize and accept it, but we have to await the next news conference or so to find out whether that is accepted or not. Okay.
And I also believe here could look at the people with the diabetes, the one with the most chronic disease, and see in what way that they can assist the people. I'm not crying down the government, because ain't everything the government can do, but yet still, we're looking for the government to do the most important and what is best for the citizens.
How would you assess the way that the government has handled the situation so far?
How would I assess it?
How they've dealt with the COVID situation? What is your view?
As the minister said, no surrender, no retreat. Yes, we respect. Everybody is not respecting the protocols. Some people are doing as they please. And I, for one, I love the curfew. And I will hope that it go on longer. But in my perspective, they are not coming out straight and telling the country the truth.
What aspect of the truth is missing in your judgment?
My aspect is all of a sudden, with the spike in the COVID, for me, everything was blaming on the bus crawl, and that was using as a scapegoat. And everybody should carry blame, not only the locals, because the locals was not going anywhere to bring it come in. And then we mingle amongst the people.
Well, I ask you to speak to the issue because it's people like you who need to be heard. Average people out there in the community, you know what's going on. You see things around you, and it is your assessment that helps to inform how government responds to various issues. So thank you very much for sharing. Thank you very much. This person wants the Ministry of Health to send the fogging people to Halls Road because they are suffering from a lot of mosquitoes in that area, so the person writes. Good morning. Hello.
Hello.
You're on the air. Turn off your radio, please.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Hi, morning.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Good. I want to ask you a few questions and give.
I'd like you to answer the questions yourself.
And give your friends some advice. First advice, I think Trinidad is a much more serious state than Barbados. And I would like to advise the Trinidad lady to use some of the knowledge and skills that she has to help Trinidad a lot more than Barbados. Now, you said that the government is kind of not coming forward with information on the variant.
Yes,
I took a few days. How are we going to know if the variant is here?
By testing.
If the government never finds anybody with it, what should they tell Barbados? We're going to dig up. We're going to move Earth and whatever.
Let's be clear about this. The government said that tests were to be sent off. To determine that for quite a while. Let me be clear to you and say to you that in my judgment, it has taken us too long to get that information to determine whether it is so or not. 3 weeks is way too long.
But I think we can only get that information from somebody who come in from a place where the variant is
The government has clearly indicated. Clearly indicated that it has whatever material is required to be sent to Pahoa or wherever it was sending it to Trinidad or wherever. My only concern is that because the variant is so serious, there's more than one to begin with. And because it is that serious, I think you need to get that information as quickly as possible. And the length of time that we have been messing around with this and hearing that it is to be sent and that sort of thing, it to me is not useful.
Okay, all right. But I think that we need to see that the government should be continuously sending to get that information every time people come in or something to check for the variant, because it just can't be a one-off thing. And then we say, all right, we have it or we don't have it, and done with that. I think the government will have to, I don't know, every 2 months, 3 months then to check to see if the variant has come into Barbados. And now that it says it in Trinidad, I think the urgency is even more so now with us to check for it. There was a gentleman who spoke and said he does not believe anything that the government say anymore. He has so much doubt. I thought you would have asked him, no, who you going to believe? If you can't believe the people that dealing with the COVID and trying their best to tell us we have 800 cases, we have 900, we have some from the West Coast, and you don't believe them. Who do you believe?
Well, you know, that's subjective.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That is highly subjective.
Okay.
And there are people who will, and then there are people who are going to have a difficulty with it.
Yeah, but I think that when we look at what is happening across the world, we can say that our government has not done badly and that we can give them the credit that if they continue with what they have been doing, that Barbara should get a handle as soon as we get the vaccine in another 2 months, let's say 2.5 months or so, I'm not sure. I don't think Barbados is a small country with limited resources have done pretty good.
What do you think the vaccine does?
It seems to build up a kind of immunity. It seems to build up a kind of immunity against it.
What I heard is that...
Unfortunately, you have to get a second dose.
What I heard is that the vaccine stops you from getting very ill. It stops you from getting ill. But it does not stop you from contracting and passing it on. That's my understanding.
I thought that the vaccine eliminates the conditions that are present to contract the COVID. Mm-hmm. It seems. Mm-hmm. Or lessen it down, so you're less likely to contract it. If you get the vaccine, and by the time you get the second dose, you should be good. If we get the Johnson one, which is say is a one dose, and that is I think 4 months off or something like that, well then I believe the world will really make some progress. But until then, and the gentleman who said that his hands get rails or something like that, and he wants to wash his hands with soap and water, I would advise him to wear gloves and let him spray the gloves and just keep on the gloves. And so there wouldn't be that conflict when you go, because people want to spray. So you wear prayer gloves, the disposable ones, and tell them, oh, look, sanitize these gloves, use the gloves, and when you come out, just throw them away. And I think that can help him. And other people like him who suffer the reaction to whatever spray the stores and so on want to use. But if the people don't know that he's washed his hands, because there won't be water at everyone they go to, well then he will go and get spray.
This person says they're using me as an example that they seem to have a cold. I don't have a cold. What I have is that it seems as though this studio and me don't agree.
It's too cold. You gotta load it up.
I don't think it's that. Most of the time that I come into this studio, I end up having a problem with my throat. When I'm away, when I do the program away from here, I don't have the same problem. So it is not that I have a cold at all. This morning, it's turning out to be yet another example of this problem.
Well, you got to get your technicians to go through the air conditioning unit and see if the ducts want sanitizing and really cleaning, so that
we did that before, but let me see what's happening. We may have to do it again. But thank you very much.
Thank you too. Have a good day.
I do apologize for any interruption that is caused as a result of this difficulty that I'm facing here. Down to brass tacks, hello. The Republicans in the U.S. Senate are asking the Democrats to delay the start of the impeachment of Donald Trump until February. Now, they are arguing that Mr. Trump needs time to prepare a defense. And now the House of Representatives last week charged Mr. Trump with inciting a deadly riot in the U.S. Capitol, paving the way for a Senate trial. If convicted, he could be barred from future office. what a difference we saw in the Capitol a few days ago with the swearing in of the new administration. Quite a positive difference, I would say. Good afternoon and welcome to the program. This person says here that they are don't brass that's 4341790. That's the number for you to call. Now, I'm getting a lot of advice as to what I'm supposed to do about this problem here, but anyhow, let's press on. St. George, they're asking for something to be done about the mosquito problem that they are facing at Cottage in St. George. I think somebody else also mentioned Pegwell in Christchurch. We have a situation here where I think there's a fair amount of worry too about dengue, and we've had health authorities, the chief medical officer of health, speak a bit about that, but it tends not to get the same degree of attention that is given to the other problem that we face. You know, at the start of today's program, one of the callers, Alvin, the regular caller, wanted to hear this morning's edition of Sadricor's Early Business. So he missed it, he said, because it didn't come exactly at 8:20. It came a little later this morning, and he felt that he and others should hear the full comment which was made by the economist Carlos Fort. Now, Mr. Fort he made a contribution that was much longer than that. His contribution was about 11 minutes, but we had to reduce it to the 5-minute limit that we have for Sagicor's Early Business. So for those of you who didn't hear what he had to say, I'm going to repeat that edition of Sagicor's Early Business for you.
Today, a view from Canadian-based economist Carlos Fort.
I am calling on the Motley administration to embrace BAMP's recommendations for improving the public health protocols, including the travel and quarantine protocols. It may also be necessary to implement a moratorium on travelers staying for less than 6 weeks, while extending the current curfew restrictions on mobility for another month until the end of February. One of my disappointments is that the government of Barbados has not been adequately learning the lessons from the United States, Canada, and the United Kingdom. The good and the bad, the evolution of the virus in source markets, public health successes and failures. Throughout this pandemic, Barbados has had a head start. It has not taken enough advantage of the leading indicators emanating from metropolitan capitals. The Motley administration has sought to rationalize its gambling by touting economic imperatives, particularly as it relates to attracting tourists. That, fellow Barbadians, is a false choice. Short-term tourism during a pandemic is a high-risk, high-stakes endeavor. It's a fool's errand. It is a strategy that puts the health of the nation at risk, a choice that puts the broader economy at risk, one that raises the prospect of longer or more frequent national shutdowns. We know the damage that the pandemic has wrought on economies, lives, and livelihoods. We must be patient. We must be disciplined. And we must focus on those areas of economic activity that can function with minimal international travel and in-person contact. To the extent that a domestic bubble, free of local or community spread, can be created, economic activity will take flight. In the interim, the government should lead the effort to mitigate the worst impacts of the COVID recession. And just as we need good data to track and manage the pandemic, we also need timely data to manage commerce, the economy, and effective mitigation strategies. Once again, I would like to take this opportunity to publicly call on the government to publish the official unemployment rate. Again, I would also like to call on the government to extend unemployment benefits to 12 months, provide a monthly stipend to those who do not qualify for unemployment benefits, but would have lost more than 75% of pre-pandemic income. Significantly increased capital spending on roads, the water distribution network, sewage and waste management systems, and any other public infrastructure that will be needed in the coming years. Implement a legal framework for material reductions in residential and commercial rents and utilities. Legislate a moratorium on evictions where tenants can demonstrate an inability to pay due to material adverse effects resulting from the recession. Coordinate and provide legal support to payment deferrals on financial obligations with interest forgiveness until September 2021, including mortgages and other long-term loans, and provide material discounts to the public for land taxes, fuel taxes, and tariff reductions on select imported goods, especially food and essential goods. It is time for some leadership on the economy. We now know that the best program is the bus. It was destined to be. It was an ill-conceived, disguised hotel bailout with no real clarity of purpose. It would be substantive if the Motley administration would demonstrate the same determination to easing the financial burden on Barbadians and mitigating the economic and social fallout as it has repeatedly strived to do for hotels and most recently tourists. The notion that taxpayers should be called upon to compensate tourists who have been in quarantine for longer than expected periods due to delays in test results does not stand up to scrutiny. The whole world is gripped in a pandemic. There have been testing delays and less than desirable access to COVID tests in the United States, Canada, the United Kingdom, and Europe. Indeed, the source markets of our tourists are the epicenters of the pandemic. They are well aware of its challenges and the risks associated with travel. I should hasten to add that discretionary travel is discouraged as a matter of public policy in Canada, the United Kingdom, and the United States. The narrative of potential damage to the Barbados brand due to longer than expected quarantine is a red herring, one that insults the intelligence of Barbadians. Perhaps the only place where the Barbados brand would be damaged in those circumstances is in the imagination of the heads of a few reactive persons that are perhaps all too accustomed to finding new ways of spending good money on bad ideas. Or perhaps spending other people's money, the people's money.
That's Canadian-based economist Carlos Fort on Sagicord's Early Business.